Good morning, it's the Big Fish. 702 ABC Sydney, 666 ABC Canberra and ABC Local Radio across New South Wales. First up, navigating Sydney Harbour. Full of fish, beautiful but daunting with giant ships plying the channels. Al McGlashan will tell us how to do it safely if you're a small boat fisher. Bushy on his long fly rod theory. Stinker talks about a man who lived on the wreck of the Cigna and caught fish. It's an amazing story. Really is. Lived in the captain's stateroom in that hulk. Was rotting away up Stockton Beach. It's an amazing yarn. And Roden Woodhams has the story of the 32-kilo Dewey caught off a secret beach just to the north of Sydney. All of that and more coming up on The Big Fish. Sydney Harbour is just such a fantastic waterway. Do you fish Sydney Harbour regularly? I'm a little timid, I must say. I do a lot on Lake Macquarie and even down around the Illawarra, but George's River, Botany Bay for sure, recreational fishing havens, and so is Sydney Harbour. But I just worry about putting the yak on or the 11-foot tinny with the 5-horse motor. You know, I can just see the headline now. Host of the Big Fish run over by P&O Liner. Al McGlashan spends a lot of time on Sydney Harbour, and he's going to give us some tips on how to fish there safely. Morning, Al.
Good morning. How are we, Scotty?
Good, thanks, Alistair. Look, this looks so good. There's so many big salmon and kingfish and even snapper and whiting and tailor and everything, really. It's a truly amazing recreational fishing haven, but I'm sure there are a lot of people like me who are a little worried about navigation and, you know, where to go and how to experience it without ending up on the ABC News. What are your thoughts about navigation and fishing on Sydney Harbour?
Well, look, firstly with the navigation, it's now classed apparently as one of the busiest waterways in the world because it's quite confining in the harbour. But on the same note, if you follow a few really basic rules, you're pretty right. You know, you've got maritime cruising around and the water police in there that are they're getting pretty good on it. Like anyone doing the wrong thing, they're on doing pretty hard now. So, but on the same note, it is daunting because you're getting something like January, February, March, there's two ocean liners coming in a day or something mad like that, or a week or something. You know, they're, every day I drove out yesterday, driving out, there's one coming in, there's another one going out, you know. But it's just a matter of, look, a bit of it's common sense. And, you know, on a weekend, you don't want to be like anchor in the middle of the main channel, which we see people do. You know, you just sit there going, and then they're yelling at people for going past them. You sit there going, you know, so you've got to have a little bit of sense and, you know, have your wits about you. But it's being observant and just, you know, watching around you now. Going up and down the Parramatta River, we used to have a lot of problem with the rowers. Because these are 15-year-old kids that are sculling backwards, so they're not even looking where they're going. And they didn't even know what side of the river to go on, and their coaches were, you know, didn't really care either, to be honest with you. So you'd be going down the right side of the river, you know, keep to the side. Driving down, and there'd be kids sculling straight into you.
Because it's the opposite of the road rules, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing everyone's got to remember. So the old thing you've got is, it's green on green upstream. So there's so your green side on the when you're going upstream. So keep to the green on, so green on green upstream, real simple stuff like that. And when you're going downstream, it's keeping on the right-hand side. So it's a few basic rules, so it is opposite, but it's also, you've just got to keep your wits about it because the fishing is pretty sensational these days. It's been a decade now since they've taken the commercial fishing out, and I probably put in somewhere between 80 and 120 days a year, and it just gets better and better and better. You cannot go and not catch fish in Sydney Harbour.
And flicking flies and lures, and the photos look so good in some of the glossy mags and some of your videos and your magazine articles as well, you know, with the opera house in the background, with kingfish and tailor busting up, the arch of the rod mimicking the arch of the bridge. You know, it's just sort of like fishing in a postcard.
It is, you know, and I took a big American guy who runs a fishing show over in the US, Carter. Andrew's out fishing a few months ago now, and he just goes, he was blown away. He just goes, I cannot believe how amazing this place is. And I go, yeah, look at that. There's a patch of kingfish there just over there in front of the opera house, you know. And he's like, he just was blown away that the amount of fish in there. And I think it's something like 600-odd species in there now, or 580 or something like that have been recorded in the harbour.
Yeah, and sports fishing just really has minimal impact, doesn't it? It's phenomenal how ineffective really rod and line fishing is when it comes to fish stocks. You can see that in Lake Macquarie, where the fish have just come back from the netting, where they were, you know, taken in so big a numbers by nets, and now it's just loaded with whiting and brim and jewfish and kingfish and all the rest. But the same with Sydney Harbour. Tell us about some of the spots that people could go and catch a squid or a brim or a kingy or a salmon and really have a good time and maybe have somewhere to pull up and have a sandwich on the beach or something. I mean, there are spots further up the harbour towards the heads that are pretty accessible and safe, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And this is a great thing. We'd need 3 hours to go through all the good spots because there's just so many areas there you can go, like all the lower reaches, anywhere you find kelp or seagrass beds, like up around Manly and that, great for catching squid. You know, it's without a problem at all. The problem is sometimes while you're trying to wind up the squid, a kingfish will come and eat it. Now, we're trying to catch the squid to use for kingy bait. They cut out the middleman and just take it straight off the back.
Straight off the jig. So where are also people in smaller boats, like the launching place to be close to nice fishing spots? Have you got plenty of that in that part of the harbour?
Absolutely. So at Manly, you've got a little launch ramp up. It's called Little Manly. It's an average boat ramp. You can get big boats in and out on it.
It's better for smaller boats. Yeah, well, that's great.
Down across Rose Bay, you know, down the other side, you've got Rose Bay, which can handle anything. So the only downside to Sydney is that the local councils down in those eastern suburbs love stinging the crap out of you for parking. So that's the only thing that, you know, trying to park a boat at the trailer and boat and the car and trailer can be a bit of a problem down there. Now, I launch up the river here at mine at Wharf Road, which is in Ermington. So it's all free up here and then just run down the river. And, you know, you can sit there off the end of, and this is how great it's changed, is that at the launching ramp, when you put your boat in the old days, you put it in. That's it. Now when I put it in, I'm running over brim and tail. There's an explosion of bait. It's literally you're knocking fish over to put the boat in the water. And that's right up the river, you know, towards Parramatta.
When I go to the fish markets, which isn't that far down the road from there, my favourite thing is just feeding those brim. I know you're not supposed to eat a lot of fish west of the bridge, but it's just the best thing sitting on the water there and huge brim coming and almost eating out of your hand there. I think they're protected around there or something. But
no, they're not.
Oh, aren't they?
This is the good part.
There's so many there and they're so big, Al.
We pulled up there and you chucked little vibes and little plastics in and those little mad eyes, your little white ones, and just twitch it a few times. You can fish right up through that area there. We've caught kingfish in there and then pulled it and then walked up and got fish and chips for lunch, which kind of seems ironic that we go to all that trouble letting these fish go and then go, oh, we'll buy some fish and chips for lunch, you know.
It's great.
Not sure we quite got it wired the right way there.
Yeah. What about if you want to put a kayak on and sneak around the edges? That's okay, isn't it?
Anywhere. Now, obviously, when you're near the main channels, you've got big boats and stuff like that, so you're going to get a bit of wake, so you need to be a bit careful and stuff. You know, underneath the bridge is probably the area to be really conscious of where you are.
Yeah, it looks really dicey under there, yeah.
Yeah, and you need to understand that you've got Circular Quay there, which is where all the ferries are going in and out of. If they're coming out and going upstream, they're going to drive across the channel to get to the northern side to go upstream. So they're not going to cut inside you there, because to be legal, they've got to go keep on the northern side if they're going upstream. So they're wanting to cut across you to get out there. So you can do it in a kayak and everything. Obviously, try and make yourself visible. The guys that sort of, you know, conceal themselves and you can't see them, that's a no-no. Try and make yourself visible. You know, it doesn't have to be high vis or anything like that, but just so everyone sees you.
You can put one of those red flags on a pole like the cyclists do off the back of the kayak. A lot of people do that, don't they?
I reckon that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Just as a side note, offshore, we've seen, you know, the kayaks out there, if there's a bit of swell running, you can't see them. They come and go. Those little flags, a couple of them I've seen out there, are brilliant for that.
Yeah. We're speaking with Alistair McGlashan about the wonders of Sydney Harbour and how accessible it is and how not to be scared. You know, if you go to the right spots and launch, you can have a good day without being run over by an ocean liner. It's interesting, I went to the Sydney Symphony one beautiful day through winter with the little bloke we saw. The Sydney Symphony does Bugs Bunny, actually, which was about my highbrow capacity, and went down to the Man of War steps for a walk, and in the Polaroids, the biggest school of the biggest blackfish I have ever seen in my life. They were 3 pounders, if I'm not sitting here. You know, it's just spectacular, crystal clear water, kelp waving in the wash. It was just an epic spot. I thought if you could just pull up and drop a bit of weed in there on a float, you'd bag out.
Oh, you would, and like we keep saying, and you know, the only people that sort of seem to be against it. The funny thing is, they took the commercial guys out, and now because it's so brilliant and it thrives, because like you're saying, sport fishing is 90% catch and release, so your impact is almost non-existent. And we still keep a feed upstream of the bridge. You don't keep them anyway, so there's only a very small area you actually take fish out of the harbour. And the small group that are so vocal about locking it up only became vocal once we removed the commercial blokes and it got better. But they don't actually go out in the water. So they wouldn't even know when you're talking about these massive blackfish cruising around that they're there.
Big jewfish. Do they hang out in the harbour? I mean, I reckon they're the pinnacle for the estuary small boat fisher, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the one thing, and this is good for the jewies and hard for us, is they love the channels. That's where they seem to sit a lot of the time. And, of course, because the harbour's busy, you can't fish. You can drift through the channels, but you can't impede, obviously, ships and stuff like that. And any of those main areas, you can't anchor and sit on them. So a lot of the really good dewy spots, like the deepest spot in the harbour, is right under the bridge. And I can guarantee you can catch a heap of dewies in there.
But you can't fishing. No, don't want to go in there. You'll be run over. Yeah.
Yeah, so look, there are areas like now. I'm pretty sure it was the Fish About Boys got a 30, well, I'm not going to say exactly how big, it was a couple of years ago, 36 or 35 kilo fish there. And they caught that over towards Rose Bay, I think it was, on one of the smaller little, you know, rocks or wrecks or something there. But there's some monsters in there. And the guys are regularly catching them up the river here, mainly smaller ones, you know, sort of up to your sort of 8-9 kilo would be a decent one. They seem to be generally smaller. The Hawkesbury seems to hold the really huge ones, but they're still in there. But we can't fish a lot of the areas. So, you know, even though the access is still there, there's a lot of restrictions in Sydney Harbour that you need to be aware of. And, you know, and like we're saying, you've just got to be, the guys are going to anchor in the channel when there's, you know, major thoroughfare and all the boats. It's like pulling up in the middle of a freeway during peak hour and just
don't
going,
do
I'll
it.
Have a cup of tea. Yeah, you just don't do it.
Well, the fish are protected in there, aren't they? I mean, they're thriving. The numbers are, I mean, to see huge schools of tailor and small pelagics busting up, massive schools of kingfish. What about the kingfish? I mean, they are the pinnacle for inshore sports fishing. What are some of your techniques and tactics? Because I know you've been catching some monsters of late.
Yeah, now listen, so for the really big ones, generally live squid is the key. So you've got to go and catch the squid, and then you drift it around the markers. You sit on, even up in Middle Harbour there, like Seaforth Bluff, you sit in those spots. You can either downrigger it, you can anchor it, you can drift it, and it's about putting time in. One of my favourite things I've been doing recently is, and this is a testament just to how healthy the system is, right up past the Gladesville Bridge now, so it's not kingy country at all. We're seeing kingfish. They're almost there all winter as well. The schools of kingfish right up in the estuary. And what we've been doing is they've been chasing the prawns and the baitfish along the bank. So you're sitting there watching them. All of a sudden you see this explosion right in on the shallows. And there's kingies chasing, you know, everything. They hammer the whole lot. So you're getting those little halco, those clear little halco poppers on there.
Yeah.
Flick it in against the edge, hook up. And then lose it all in all the borings and the bloody wharves and landing it. That's a whole different thing. I can guarantee you'll hook up in there with one of those little lures, but catching it's a whole different thing.
All right. Well, we're sucking up our courage and we're going to all give it a go now because it's everyone's harbour to share. And the more people who love it and cherish it and look after the environment, the better it gets. Tight lines to you, Alistair McGlashan. You've made my casting arm itch.
Mate, sounds like a good plan.
It's the big fish. 702 ABC Sydney, ABC Local Radio, New South Wales.
I bet you're going fishing all of the time, my baby going fishing too. I bet your life, your loving wife's are gonna catch more fish than you. Any fish bites when you got good bait. And here's a little something I would like to relate. Any fish bites when you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. I went on down to my favorite fishing hole, baby took along a pulling line. Threw my line on into the bottom. Yes, I got them and I took them home to mama about supper time. Any fish bites when you got good bait. And here's a little something I would like to relate. With my pole and my line, I'm a-going fishing. Yes, I'm going fishing and my baby gone fishing too.
Yes, we're all going fishing on the Big Fish. 702 ABC Sydney, ABC Local Radio New South Wales, and 666 ABC Canberra. And the original cod botherer, the Canberra cod botherer, Nathan Walker, is extremely excited because the cod season officially opened on the 1st of December. When most are out walking the dog, he's out walking the cod. Nathan the Cod Walker, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Although you do walk the dog for the cod, don't you, sometimes?
I certainly do, yep.
Which is a lure technique that's wonderful fun, but also fly fish for the cod. What will you be doing this weekend?
Yeah, look, I've got a big two-handed spay rod, which I've been out practicing the last few months, so I'll be getting out there with the spay rod and throwing some really big oversized flies, big tube flies.
Okay, underwater flies, sinking lines, or on the top?
A bit of both. Mostly I use a Skagit shooting head, which is a really aggressive weight-forward shooting head, and I'll be using a range of sink tips on that as well, fishing deep and fishing the surface as well. So, yeah, I'll have top to bottom covered.
Will you be walking? Will you be going up the rivers?
Most definitely walking, yep. So I'll be on the Murrumbidgee mostly in Canberra. So on the north side of Canberra here, we've got various spots, but yeah, we'll be racking up the caves, don't worry about that.
What are the requirements for walking the cod on the Murrumbidgee? Is it important to get away from the spots where people drive up and sink a body grub in the car?
Yeah, it definitely is. They're the more pressured areas and they tend to be the spots where most people bait fish. So a lot of the lure guys will walk a bit further. Generally, those cod are less pressured and tend to be bigger cod as well. So definitely be putting in a few Ks. But yeah, definitely you want a good set of walking boots. So I generally wear a set of thigh breathable waders to protect against snakes as well. We've got a few snakes here in the nation's capital. So yeah.
It's funny how Australians have adapted the wading technology. Breathable waders, everyone in America says, oh yeah, you know, you need them for the cold water. No, mate, we need them for the snakes. We don't care about the water.
Exactly,
we're happy to get in the water. You know, wet wading's fun.
Exactly, yeah. No, I love wearing the waders because you also got your wading boots, which have quite good grip and are designed to be walking on wet rocks and that sort of thing. So yeah, I find it great.
And what's that section of the Bidgee like?
It's very good. It's very rocky, gorgy type country. A lot of deep holes and yeah, a lot of boulders out in the water. So plenty of cover for the cod to ambush their prey. But yeah, it's some beautiful water.
How many casts do you regularly put in before you hit one?
A lot. A lot. But depending if you know if the cod are there or not, I can put anywhere up to 100 casts in the spot before I'll move on. As long as I'm reasonably confident there's a fish there. But yeah, sometimes they can hit within the first few casts. Sometimes I'll hit after 100 casts. So yeah, it's sort of one you just got to gauge.
How far can you walk in a day?
Some days I'll do up to 6Ks in a day. That's probably getting towards the limit of it. Yeah, 6Ks is about my absolute limit, but generally just 2 or 3Ks is fine.
And the further you get away from the road access points, the better it gets?
Oh, definitely. Yep, definitely do. So you tend to find that those less pressured areas that the cod, in some cases, have never even seen a lure, so they tend to act a bit more aggressively. So around the more well-known spots, the pressured spots, they're a lot smarter and a lot harder to catch those cod, so generally try to steer clear of those.
Yeah, is that water warmer than the water below Burrinjuck?
Yeah, it is, yep.
And that would make a difference for them to be actively feeding at this time of year?
It definitely does, yep. Makes a huge difference. So you can find them a lot more active in those parts than below Burrinjuck.
Yeah, it's an interesting river, isn't it? It comes down in a big spiral, heads east for a while, then swings around out of Tantanga and comes back down into Canberra, and then,
yep.
What, it's impounded again or it just runs through?
Yeah, just runs straight through down to Burrinjuck. So
it's pretty much free all the way from Tantangra all the way to Burrinjuck.
Yeah, pretty much, yep.
No dams or weirs?
No, not at all. So from the where they say the Bredbow River runs into the Bidgee, the junction, that's the cut-off for the trout water. And from there on, that's when you start to hit into your natives, your Murray cod, golden perch, and your dreaded carp as well.
Gee, you've got miles, literally hundreds of miles of water.
Oh, we do, yeah. There's no shortage of spots, that's for sure.
There'd be plenty of spots you wouldn't have fished yet.
Oh, yeah. There's quite a few. I've covered a lot of ground over the last sort of 15, 20 years, but haven't even scratched the surface, really.
Mm. And what's the walking like? I mean, it sounds a little bit difficult if you're not reasonably fit, scrambling up and down cliffs and boulders and things.
Look, surprisingly, the access is really good. There's walking track the whole length of Canberra, so the government are putting in the walking track. A lot of bushwalkers get on there as well, do a bit of sightseeing.
You ever caught any of those with a back cast?
Thankfully not.
You know, you might snare yourself a nice bushwalker.
You never know. Well, thankfully my casting technique, I'm spay casting, so the line's not actually getting aerialised too much.
Good, you're doing the old swish it around and water haul and
water
out.
Water hauling, loading off the water. So.
Yeah. But I mean, you're making it harder for yourself. It's so much easier to throw lures.
Oh, look, it is. It is, but I like a challenge. I like to try different things, and in a lot of cases, the cod have never even seen a fly, so I tend to find they'll act a bit more aggressively towards a fly.
And what about surface flies and surface lures at this time of year? Are they a proposition?
They are. Look, that's probably the number one proposition for everyone in Canberra. There's a big movement towards these surface lures and these sort of subsurface lures. It's just the action. You hear the sound, and it's heart racing stuff. That's probably the number one proposition for most people.
So a big fly rod gurgler or popper or Dahlberg and...
Big boy. Mouse imitations, big gurglers, big poppers, things that make plenty of noise and displace a lot of the water.
Yeah, and you need a big rod to throw something that bulky as well. Well, tight lines, mate. I'm holding you up here. I know you're itching to go.
I certainly am.
And go and do a bit of cod walking. Nathan Walker.
Beautiful. Thanks, Scott.
The fly fisherman who walks at Canberra. It's a great story. Season's now officially open, so you can get out and have a go at the cod. But please limit your kill and to catch your limit, just let them go. Really, they're too precious to catch, I think. Keeping them's a bit of a sin, but I guess if you'd like to eat one and it's legal, then you can. So get out and get into it. Stinker talking about fishing the wreck of the Cygnus, an amazing adventure story. And also Roden Woodhams with the story of the 32-kilo Dewey. Photographic evidence up on our website.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Stinker, this is the time when we all start to get ready to go off on holes and do a bit of fishing with the family. Can you remember the first fish you ever hooked as a kid?
Oh, vividly. Vividly. Yep, I know exactly where I was standing. What I can't remember is how old I was. But I think I was probably maybe 5 or 4, something like that. I was standing on Greenbank Island at Tweed Heads, when actually Greenbank Island was an island. These days it's been developed in real estate, so the shape of Tweed Heads has changed radically since I was a kid. But I was fishing in the Tweed River near a place called the Blue Hole, which people from up the far north coast would know about. It's quite a famous fishing spot in the Tweed River. And I caught a little undersized chopper tailer. It was no bigger than your hand, really, but it left such an indelible impression in my mind that still lasts until this day.
Mm-hmm. Kids love tailor because they can bite back.
Well, yeah, you worked that out along the way. But, yeah, but I'll tell you what the worst bite is, the ones you least suspect to be bitten by, are leather jackets. Can they take a lump out of you? Yeah, they're not very friendly fish at all. But, yes, I remember it plainly. And from that day, I was hooked, I should say. And I spent a lot of time with my father and one of my uncles. And I fished, oh, golly, right throughout. Well, ever since, basically.
And you've just published a beautifully illustrated children's book about fishing and adventures in a little boat. You'd be dealing with a lot of kids, I guess. You've been doing signings and whatnot. That must be a bit of fun.
I'm very, very lucky to have come across a fantastic artist in our community, Ileana Clark. And she puts my words into paintings. And really, when you look at them, gosh, you can certainly associate them with fun on the water, you know, the dolphins and the whales and the sharks and the stingrays and everything else. Yeah, it all becomes really... The world of kids fishing is just a wonderful world.
And plenty of spots. I think people really just want to walk down to a breakwall or a jetty or a beach and throw a line in for half an hour and hopefully catch something. Plenty of spots for that around Port Stephens, Fingal Bay.
I really think, I mean, I've been here for a long time, but I reckon Port Stephens is made for family fishing, particularly at this time of the year, from now through to Christmas and maybe even till February, March, April. But if the weather's good, everything depends upon the weather, but we've got everything here. Absolutely everything. And there's plenty of room. It's not a small water course here. It's a massive area of water, so there's plenty of room to spread out. But our beaches are safe. What I would never encourage is rock fishing. I don't think rock fishing is for kids at all.
I think one thing you wouldn't encourage is what a fella... I was just looking through some of your old articles, Something Fishy, and you wrote about a bloke you met earlier this year who and was particularly sad because the wreck of the Cigna had disappeared. But tell us about the bloke who used to sleep in the cabins. That's an amazing story.
Yes, well, Chris, in fact, he has a book that's being launched on the 14th of December down in Newcastle. And his book, it is quite extraordinary what he did. He'd paddle out in a surfboard off Stockton Beach and crawl into the wreck of the Cigna, this massive ship, half a ship actually. The other half was towed back to be demolished, but half a ship, and that was in the 1970s.
Yeah, it's the back end where the cabins, like it's a giant ore carrier.
Yeah.
You know why that was there? I was reading about it the other day. They were going to take that half away with the tug as well, and there was a strike. And the blokes on the tug went on strike and said no more work, cut the line, and that's where she stayed for 40
that's
years.
That's where it is. And Chris crawled into the captain's cabin and set up a little... And he took all his fishing gear and a couple of his mates over there,
and they caught some fantastic fish. And he wasn't a fisherman, interestingly enough. He wasn't a fisherman. He was a surfer. So when they got on the boat, then he started to learn how to catch fish. And, of course, the fishing was quite spectacular. And so he came and saw me. He said, I wouldn't mind telling this story. I said, well, I think there's a little book in that. And off he went and wrote it. Yes, he wrote it.
We should get him on. That's a great yarn, isn't it?
I tell you what, it would be good to talk to him, because what he did, I thought about it a couple of times, and I thought, gee, I wouldn't mind having a crack at that. But he actually did it.
Imagine negotiating your way up the rusted hulk of the bowels of the ship to find the captain's stateroom and fishing out of a porthole. What did they catch, Dinker?
Oh, they caught big mulloway, they caught big flathead and tailor and salmon and sharks and everything they got. They caught mullet and ludric they were catching on 2-0 hooks with no float at all, just a 2-0 hook and a bunch of sea cabbage, which was growing all over the ship. Throw it out and whack-o. I mean...
fun.
We might see if we can get him on the program, because it's certainly an interesting yarn.
It's an adventure, isn't it? Hey, tight line, Stinker, good to talk to you again, and we'll catch you next time on The Big Fish.
There is, Scott.
I fished everywhere, man. Up beaches, boats and piers, man. I'm in up to my ears, man. With hand light rods or spears, man. I've fished everywhere. I caught pinkies, kingies, dragon whiting, black brim, blackfish when they're biting, flathead, flounder, pike and hake, blue pointers, tiger sharks, that's flake, redfin, yellow belly, marigot, tarpon, brown trout, rainbows, even at a carp.
Well, after years of keeping it hidden, Bushy has finally unleashed his long rod on the world.
Yeah, I don't know about unleashed, but yeah, I just got you sort of go out there on the lake and you're waving this stupid long thing around, and people come up and they always say, oh yeah, I'm interested in that long thing, long rods, but I don't know how to spay cast and all those sorts of things. Everyone thinks just because something's long you have to spay cast or use weird lines or do something, but I'm not that complicated.
You wouldn't even know what a skagit line was.
Not much. I don't use them. I know what they are, but I don't use them. But
well,
this was a very simple concept. It was just to keep things, you know, up a bit higher and cast a bit easier, and not hook up with so much stuff behind you. And it worked really well. So yeah, I guess that article we wrote for the magazine was just really kind of keep it simple and explain how it actually worked.
That's right. It's in this month's edition of Fly Life magazine. The rod's 13'6" and takes conventional light fly lines, like a 4-weight or a 5-weight, and it does cast like a dream. I've given it a go on the road next to your house.
Yeah, I haven't caught many fish on that road, but it's seen a bit of casting.
Yeah. It almost get a top-knot pigeon. But tell us about the development of it, because it's 13.6. You found that to be the magical number, I believe.
Yeah, that seems to be about right. But two-handed, it's two-handed rod, but you can still cast it with one hand, so I suppose technically it's kind of a switch rod. But when you cast with two hands, it's if you're casting with a short rod, with two hands you don't get quite the rod tip speed if you're a bit technical for people that don't fly fish, but if you're casting single-handed, you use your other hand to pull the line while you're casting, and it makes the tip bend a bit harder and you get more line speed. But when you've got two hands hanging onto the rod, you can't do that, so short rods don't cast all that well when you're double-handed, but it's just the law of the lever. If you've got a longer rod, the tip moves faster, just like the big windmills. If you've got the hanging onto the base of that windmill, it's not going very fast. But if you go out to the end of the turbine, you'd be swung around like your head would fall off, probably. You'd be doing 1,000,000 mph. So when the rods got up to about 13.6, the tip started to whistle and really go fast enough to cast the light lines very well. But your two hands are not moving fast at all, so that just means you can concentrate on keeping everything straight. And the whole system works pretty well. I actually, because I'm crazy, I made quite a lot of rods. I made them up to 17 feet long. I know they were a bit cumbersome and didn't work, but I wanted to just try everything, just because your brain thinks something mightn't work. You know, you've been wrong. I've been wrong a lot of times, so you've got to try, all the weird stuff, and then finally, in the end, it came back to 13.6 was a really effortless way to cast and kept you up out of all the rubbish and was good for fighting the fish, and it wasn't too heavy and cumbersome. So, yeah, 13.6 is good. If we get different material, if we make something even lighter than graphite or whatever, or maybe we could go a bit longer. That might still be good.
But keeping that lightness, has that been really important? Because some of those double-handed rods that they use for steelhead and salmon and whatnot are very, very heavy. They're quite heavy compared to your one.
Yeah. Well, we mainly wanted to do this, just catching trout on the fours and five weights. So, having a big, heavy rod to catch those smaller trout, that sort of thing, sort of defeats the purpose a little bit. But and look, some people would find the rods we're using cumbersome too, and there's no need for anyone to use them, that's for sure. You know, it's just, if you're a bit diseased, I mean, some fish is good. A lot of fish is really better, as far as I'm concerned. And I know I can catch a lot more fish with that, with the longer rod.
Well, let's take it through the development, because you develop the rod and then you test it out on fish. What fish have you caught, and how have you caught them with the 13'6" 5-weight rod, or is it in different weights?
Yeah, look, it's in different weights, but I mean, the 5s and 6 is the one I use the most, but I do have some we made for 4 weights, which do work. But I suppose we mainly made them for Lake Eucamina. We wanted to fish 3 flies on the leader and long leaders, sort of 20 feet long, so that you find an ice breeze going past a point or something, and you heave a long way out and you just let the breeze swim those 3 flies around. And if there's any rainbows in the area, they just find it. So we did a lot of that kind of fishing. So we thought the long rod would be very good for that, and it was.
Do they make it easier to strike at that length to detecting takes with a 20-foot leader?
Yeah, you can mend the line easily, strike easily. It worked very well, but what sort of happened was we got used to picking up that rod, and we'd go for a walk, you know, you walk away from the boat for 500 metres and do some of this long casting, and then you're walking back, so you'd see a big brown trout cruise along the edge, so you're stuck with a ginormous, stupid-looking 13-foot rod, and you go, oh, well, what the hell, we'll throw a fly in front of this brown trout. So gradually, over a few years, we just realised that they work pretty well for everything, so now we use them for dry flies with light tippets, we use them for polaroiding, we just go trout fishing now, that's our rod. But my mate Dave, who we talk about a bit, who's a legend in this game, he's taken it a bit further. He's caught quite big cod on his 5-weight, 13'6". He catches a lot of bass, and he uses them for brim and whiting. And if you see Dave fishing pretty well, always got the stupid great long in his long rod in his hand, yeah.
Well, that's his name, isn't it, Longan?
Longan, that's it, yeah.
Kay Bush is our guest, and the big article in the latest edition of Fly Life, the summer edition, and that magazine goes round the world. It's Australia's contribution to quality fishing publishing, really. It's an extraordinarily beautiful beautiful magazine, known for its brilliant photography. But I love the article because it's very much you talking. You know, it's just saying, hey, do whatever you like doing. I like catching fish. This sort of works for me. I'm no guru. Don't follow me. Don't sit down at my feet and, you know, cross your legs. But if you want to give it a go, you can, but they really can't, because you need to get them out there. Now, is someone going to take this up? I know you've been speaking with the guru Ian Miller and others who make rods in Australia. I mean, is there a chance that this will become
I mean, I'm sure someone will, you know, figure out. I guess that was half the reason for writing the article. I mean, it's a bit of an ego trip, because you think, well, I'm not going to probably make any money out of it ever, but when someone else works out the fact that they're really, really good and makes them, I'd like to be able to sit back in their rocking chair and say, yeah, I did that 20 years ago. That's part of it, I suppose. You know, everyone's got a bit of an ego, so you think, well, I want to get it out there that we did it. I mean, there's probably other people doing it as well, you know, but we started from scratch and made it happen, so that's probably a bit of it, you know.
The casting,
a bit of an ego left in the old dog.
Yeah, the casting technique's really interesting. Until I gave it a go down at your place, I hadn't used a double-handed rod, and you almost keep one hand as a hinge point and move the other one. And also putting that stripping guide just on top of the cork is a stroke of genius. And the light line, you can trap it onto the cork with just a little bit of pressure from one finger. So it makes controlling the line as you cast and allowing more to go out very precise, as opposed to groping for it with it flapping around from a guide way up. So that little design feature was an absolute godsend to me.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, really. I sort of figured it out that I, you know, the line had escaped down again, and you'd be looking for it and do a dud cast. I didn't like that much, so I thought, I haven't seen the guide way down there, but I'll put it there because it'd be easier, and I did. And the amount of arguments I had with Dave over that, we'd sit around the campfire drinking a scotch, and I think the words might have been, there's no way in hell I'll ever put a guy down there. And then finally got him out there and made him cast with mine, because he had his that we made without the rod, the guy down the bottom. So there's no way in hell I'll ever cast with that. And then we got out there about 10 minutes finally after about 12 months of trying to convince him. And he's had about 10 minutes and went, all right, put the guy there. Pretty funny, really. I mean, with some guy that's a bit of a guru in Scandinavia or something, he got on the internet and he said, absolutely ridiculous. There's no possible way that you can net a trout after you've hooked it from a boat with a 13-foot rod. Dave and I just looked at each other and thought, gee, we must have been lucky 400 or 500 times in the last year.
you didn't tell them you've got a net with a 15-foot handle.
Yeah, we probably do bad things. You probably high-stick them and make them do funny bends if you took a picture of them, but we haven't managed to break a rod doing it. You just get the trout up the top and slide it over near yourself and net the bloody thing. It's not rocket science. Luckily, we didn't know it was impossible.
Hopefully, it'll be bending a lot this summer.
Okay, mate.
See you later, Bushy. The name of this program is The Big Fish, and every now and then we do actually talk about big fish. Roden Woodhams, how are you, Sir Roden?
Well, Scott, I'm not as well as my good friend Jay Pilson, but I'm very well because catching very large fish is generally a team effort, Scott. You can't, you can do it by yourself, but it's very difficult. And I might add, on a beach with breaking waves at about 1.3 metres, then it's very difficult to catch the giant G-fish by yourself. So I was a little ill on Saturday night, so the boys left me asleep on the couch, some bad chicken, and they woke me up at 4:30 a.m. Sunday morning, and I knew the moment they walked in the door, Scott, what was going on, because there is a very, very distinctive aroma associated with giant G-fish, and they were covered in it. And they said, you better come and have a look what's in the back of the ute. Well, I floated off the lounge, skipped outside, and I think the first three words I said was, yes, yes, yes. The culmination of about 12 months hard work by Butch, Nate Steele, Roden the Rat Woodhams, and young Jay Pilson. Of course, Scotty, you're aware of the first hit we had, which was that nice little 12-kilogram fish from up the Hawkesbury. But last week, off a beach and near Gosford and Terrigal, no more will be said than that, finally it happened. 145 centimetres long, 32.77 kilos, proper fish. One of the ear bones has left and gone to the Mulloway research boys, and hopefully in maybe 4 or 5 weeks we'll have an accurate idea of how old that fish was, but it was a female. She was 3/4 of the way into her row, so almost full. Unfortunately, we couldn't revive her on the beach. She'd battled her heart out, and as you saw from the photo, Scott, she'd been feeding hard.
Yeah, look, and I know that the researchers will love to get an otolith from a fish that big. The aptly named Matt Taylor is the lead researcher in New South Wales, does a terrific job in stocking Mulloway too. And that, then Coroner Roden went into work and you did the autopsy. My goodness, the stuff that came out of that giant fish.
Well, Scott, it just gives you an indication of how active and how brilliant and sneaky a jewfish of that size is, and their capacity to collar large prey. Now, Matt had been talking to Jay, obviously, so the olive bone was off over him. He also did mention to us that there's a bit of science around that suggests that a jewfish that size can go from 0 to 70 kilometres an hour in 2 body lengths. So we've had a bit of a look at the size of the fish, and in its stomach was a whole 33-centimetre blackfish, unblemished, 2 45-centimetre tailor, semi-digested, but also swallowed whole with no broken backbone, and a 25-centimetre squire baby snapper. So you could imagine, you know, you're just minding your own business. You're a blackfish feeding on a bit of weed. And next minute, you're looking at the internal structure of the gill set of a giant mulloway.
That's just fabulous. And goes with the old adage, big bait, big fish. I mean, put on a big live yellowtail as we've done, and you're halfway there, aren't you? Or a big live squid?
Well, again, we go back to that conversation, how crazy a fish is the giant mulloway. You know, we've got anecdotal reports and diver reports of watching fish up to 40 kilos sucking worms off the bottom and eating bass yabbies, which is kind of like us. We don't mind an hors d'oeuvre before the main meal. And then to be able to hammer a 45-centimetre tailor in open water and swallow it, wow, that's an effort. We all know how fast they are and how they can move. So, it's come to fruition. Like I said before, generally the capture of large fish is dependent on teamwork. So Jay angled and Butch got it up the beach, and I believe you're going to put some photos on the website for people to have a look at. And now, of course, they're off hunting the next one, which is called the 40.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. It's a terrific story and just goes to show how dedicated the recreational anglers are to catch the fish of a lifetime like that. Roden, thanks for sharing it with us. You have a magnificent day, and you and I better get out and get one for ourselves.
Well, Scott, it's about our turn. No doubt your good self and your young son will be joining Uncle Rody on the boat shortly for a wee expedition. See if we can crack the 20. That's our mark.
Okay, we'll do our best. We've got one about 7, one about 8 last year. We only went out twice.
That's right, Scott. I figure if we go up a kilo a year before you and I turn 80, we might get a 30-kilo fish.
That's right, and I'll send your otoliths off to be analysed.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, sent the wrong ear bones.
Tight lines, Roden.
Tight lines to you too, Scotty. See you, mate.
It's the big fish, and Peter LeBlanc, Pitwater Pete, knows exactly where that giant jewfish was caught, but he's under pains of death not to to let anyone know. Morning, Peter.
Morning, mate. How are you?
Yeah, going really well, and they are still on the jewies in the Hawkesbury, aren't they? It's a wonderful fishery. You do catch quite a few of them as well. Where would you go if you're in the boat and you wanted to catch one?
Mate, at the moment there's a lot of activity that seems to be happening around the Broken Bay area. At the moment, this time of the year, as you've just heard, Taylor, one of the markers that you actually use for this time of year, if there's some Taylor hanging around in Broken Bay out there, don't be scared to whack a live one on, or even get one of the big micro jigs out. And what we're using 120 to 200 gram micro jigs, so don't let the name fool you. They're quite a large lure, and if you work them underneath the Taylor schools, you tend to stay away from the smaller Taylor, but tend to get the other predators that happen to be hanging around underneath it, be it a big flathead or a jewfish or, you know, even every now and then, a shark.
Yeah, or a kingy. Speaking of kingies, they're your main target. How are they going?
Mate, they're doing okay. They're a little bit slower than what we'd be normally expecting for this time of year. The water's very warm, but it's very greeny, funny colour as well. So it tends to make it so that we're only getting very short periods of surface activity. And once that surface activity disappears, you have to go and put the old downriggers on and start hunting around for them. So if you're like me and you're like just going for the kings, mate, it's a great time of the year. The larger ones are still in here. We haven't had the smaller rat kingfish move in their numbers yet. Once they do, we tend to find the bigger kingies, they tend to be like crankier adults. They get away from the kids. They don't want to be near them. They'll go out back out to Broken Bay and find other areas. So now's the time for us to try and get some of those larger kings.
And no problem getting the live bait for them?
Mate, at the moment, we're finding the squid being okay. We're finding most of the weed beds around Pitwater, for all the way from Mackerel Beach down to Longnose Point, that area where there's a lot of fringe of weed all along there that's doing really well. If you want to get up into the shallows, over there at Palm Beach Wharf and the Palm Beach weed bed area, that tends to be where some gathering first thing in the morning.
Yeah, we've caught a few there, and the smaller jigs tend to work, although that's what I've used with you. Are they still on the smaller jigs?
It's better to use the smaller jigs at the moment. If you've got a few people out on the boat, vary the size of the jigs, because we're finding that some squid are larger than the others. We're getting them all the way from the size of your index finger right through to about 9 inches long. So there's a big variation in there, but if you've got a smaller jig that's going out there all the time, they're all likely to jump on that. Whereas if you've got a bigger one, as I say, get one of your mates to chuck out a larger one and then two other people use smaller ones, and hopefully it all comes together for you as you are casting in different directions.
Great tips for Pittwater Pete. You get into them this morning. Tight lines.
Thank you, mate.
Peter LeBlanc on The Big Fish.